For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
We've passed around a copy of a case from the Wu Men Quan, which was a collection of stories that was published in China a little bit after Dogen returned to Japan. So he didn't know it, but it became a Zen bestseller. And so I don't think there's any... It came to Japan, and I don't think there's anything about it that will hurt us, even if it's not sort of formally a Soto koan collection. Before we read the koan, though, in order to understand what it's talking about, you need to know a story. It's a folk tale from the 10th century, the Tang Dynasty. It was very popular then. There are at least three known published versions of the story. And it's about a girl named Qian. She was very beautiful, and she was an only child. She had had a sister who died when she was young, and so Qian was beloved by her father. And when she became of marriageable age, an influential man, very accomplished and wealthy, came to her father and asked for her hand, and her father thought that would be fantastic for her, and he said yes. That was kind of his job, to make sure that she would be well taken care of. This was not a happy moment for Qian, because she had a cousin named Zhou who she had grown up with, and they had been best friends from the time they were very small and played together all the time. And in fact, they were together so often that Qian's father used to joke and say, well, you're going to make a wonderful couple when you grow up. And so as Zhou and Qian grew up, eventually they fell in love, and they continued to assume that they were going to be married when they got older. So when Qian learned that her father had promised her in marriage, she became distraught and went to her bed and stayed there. And Zhou became very angry and very upset and decided that he was going to leave town and move to the next province. He could not stay there while Qian married someone else. So that night, after hearing the news, he went to the river and bought a boat, loaded it with all his possessions, and started out onto the river rowing to the next province. But he'd barely pulled away from the dock when he saw this form running along the riverbank, and he heard a voice calling, Zhou, Zhou, wait, it's me, Qian. So he pulled back to the dock, and Qian came up and jumped into the boat, and they embraced, and they pushed away from the dock again and rowed down to the next province. Once they got there, they married, and Zhou passed the Imperial Civil Service exams, and so he got a very good position in society. They had two children. But in spite of all this good fortune and all of the good things in their lives, they still were not completely happy. They were uncomfortable with the way that both of them had run away together, and felt like they needed to return to home to see their families and ask forgiveness for having brought this shame and sorrow and worry upon their parents, who they hadn't been in touch with at all. So they got another boat, and Zhou and Qian and their two children went back home. And when they arrived, Zhou said, well, let me go talk to your father. I'll go to your house and see if I can smooth things over. You stay here with the children and we'll be back. So he did that, and he went into town, and he saw his uncle, Qian's father, who ran up to him and said, Joe, it's so great to see you. We were so worried. Where have you been all these years? And Joe said, well, Uncle, I've come to ask your forgiveness for what Jen and I have done. And Jen's father said, well, what are you talking about? And he said, well, for running off and getting married and leaving you here without your permission. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. Jen is back at the house. She's been in a coma ever since the day that you left. And Joe said, what are you talking about? I mean, we left and made a new life together. For 5 years, we've been married and we have two children. And Jen is fine. So Jen's father said, well, come with me. And he took Joe into the house, into Jen's bedroom. And there, lying in the bed, was Jen. Lying there, speechless and pale and washed out. And Joe couldn't believe it. He said, well, you're going to have to come with me back to the boat to see what I've... You really have to see Jen. And Jen's father was talking and then spoke to Jen and said, I can't believe this. He's trying to tell me that the two of you ran away and that you've been living together for 5 years and that you have two children. And Jen in the bed smiled. And when that happened, Joe went back to the boat to get Jen and brought her and the children back into town. As they came close to the house, Jen, from the bedroom, got up and came out of the house smiling. And as the other Jen saw her, she smiled, and they got, as they approached each other, they suddenly merged into one. And Jen's father said, I am so relieved to see you well again. I've suffered for so long. And Jen said, well, on that day when you told me that you promised me to someone else, I went to bed, and when I knew that Joe was going to be leaving by the river, I ran to see him and jumped into the boat. But it was like a dream. And I don't know which of these people I am. Am I Jen who was lying in the bed? Or am I Jen who went to the next province and married Joe and had two children? That's the story. So it's kind of a charming story. You can see why it would be very popular. In that, supposedly this case is, at least refers to that story. So this is case 35 from the Mumenquan. It has different names. Which is the true Jian is one of them. And the case is simple. Master Wuzu asked a monk, the woman Jian and her spirit separated, which one is the true Jian? And Wuman, who is the compiler of the Mumenquan, had a comment. If you realize the true one, you will know that emerging from one husk and entering another is like a traveler putting up at an inn. If this is still not clear, don't rush about recklessly. When you suddenly separate into earth, water, fire, and air, you will be like a crab dropped into boiling water, struggling with your 7 hands and 8 legs. Don't say I never told you. And Wu Min always writes a verse with his koans. And so the verse for case 35 is, the moon and the clouds are the same. Mountains and valleys are different. 10,000 blessings. 10,000 blessings. Is this one? Is this two? So... you can see the Buddhist and Zen themes, or at least metaphorically, that are at least metaphorically present in the story, right? I mean, you've got the spirit leaving Jen's body and going into taking on a new form as the second Jen who goes off with Zhou and gets married, which is pretty close to at least the popular understanding of how rebirth would work. And you have this idea of the two separate individuals who are merged into one, which Wu Min plays with in his verse, with this whole idea that, moon and clouds are the same, mountains and valleys are different. Is this one? Is this two? So you have Chen 1 and Chen 2. Are they one or are they two? Or are they the same? Are they different? But I have to say that, I think my talk won't really be in the style that I think Wu Min would have given. But these are traps he's laid out for you, you know? These aren't explanations to help you figure out the koan. They're traps to get you to try to figure out the koan. If nothing else, he's taken these themes from Buddhist thought and literature, the idea of rebirth and going from husk to husk to husk, or for that matter, it's sort of body to body to body with rebirth. Is that the same person who's being reborn each time? Or for that matter, if you look at a husk as a moment, and we go from moment to moment to moment to moment, is that the same person? Are you the same person you were when you were a child? I mean, you'd like to say, you certainly get irritated if you have parents who continue to remember you as a child and keep treating you that way, or constantly when they talk to you, do you remember the time that? And you just kind of go, please stop. And yet we do, while we're selective about it, we do assume we are the same as that baby. Some sort of continuity in the discontinuity and the temporal separation there. Where am I going? But in talking about this rebirth and this passage from husk to husk to husk, and is Chen one or is she two? I mean, he's asking this about a fictional creation. I mean, how much energy are we expected to spend on trying to figure out whether this fictional creation has one nature or two natures, whether she's had continuity over her life from the time she was a child playing with Zhou and now she's a mother who's come back home to see her father. And that is analogous to the task that Woman sort of puts before us when he says, what about your life? What about your life? Are you... What happens as you go from husk to husk to husk? And are you one or are you two? You are a collection of five skandhas. Are you really one? Are you really five? You live in the world. Is this world lots of different things? Is the world really one? But the analysis, if there is no real thing, this is getting lost in the concepts. Trying to define concepts that are just like what the Heart Sutra is saying about all of the things in our experience and the skandhas and the elements of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path and so on. These are empty. Not in the sense that there's nothing there, but our defining them as things is just a concept that's empty because there's nothing that corresponds to that. Because everything in our experience is made up of parts or is constantly changing, so it can't be the same thing, or it exists only in relation to other things and dependent upon other conditions that must exist for it to remain in effect. And we can't even think about things without thinking of them in relation to something else. You can't imagine a Buddha, for example, and just think of a Buddha. There's always a backdrop, or there's an altar, or there's something. It's only a Buddha in relation to something else in this image that you have. There's no such thing as a person. There's a person who's not that person. If who I am is Douglas, who is not Hector, then Hector is a part of who I am. So we can't go down that path. So and before going down a different part of the talk, I just want to say that this is a koan about that's asking, okay, who is Chen? Who are you? Who are you? And it spends, you know, and it gives you some little hints to think about it, you know, more little temptations on how to think about, answer that question by the way it describes Chen, right? She's described, it's not that just she's, Chen 2 has come out of Chen 1, but she's been defined as a friend, a cousin, a little girl, a daughter, a fiance, a wife, a mother. And all of that is certainly in accord with the Confucian thought of the era, but it's also certainly also Chinese thought would have said, well, that's also okay from a Buddhist point of view. She lived within these conditions of social relations. And that's, she exists only within those social relations. That's the essence of who she is. But, you know, at least these are all helpful things to know about and helpful to, you know, the traditional Buddhist metaphor is, you know, you use a thorn to pull a thorn out, get a thorn out of your thumb. Those kinds of teachings are helpful to kind of unwind the mess of thinking we get involved in. But that's not really the point. The awakening that we seek and that we actually practice when we do Zazen is not about being able to define something or explain something, having an idea of something, having a vision of something, being clear, being calm, feeling something. It's about simply being and expressing what we are. And to do that, it's fine to have thoughts and feelings, but we can't hold on to them the way Wu Men is tempting us to do, to describe ourselves so that we find ourselves living within some definition and some explanation we've given ourselves as who we really are. But have a have the thoughts and the ideas live within us rather than our living within them. Our experience of Zazen is that we know ourselves by being ourselves. We need to let go of our clinging to thoughts and ideas. And I've always loved metaphors that Dogen uses a number of places that that doing Zazen and the expression of our Buddha nature and of our awakening is like the fish escaping from the net and the tiger escaping from the cage and then roaming the jungle and the mountains and swimming in the sea and the dragon swimming in the sea freely also. So now you know the answer. You don't need to practice Zen anymore. But I think that something else that's pretty good about this folktale is that it does sort of metaphorically capture how we can divide ourselves. Are we one or are we two? I mean, Qian hears this bad news and she splits herself sort of in the same way that we do when we have a problem come up. I had wanted to stay home and watch TV one night, and I hear that my wife's cousin is coming over, and we've already cooked chili, and her cousin hates chili. So you're sitting there, oh my God, I'm here, and start thinking about the cousin coming over. You get caught up in these thoughts, and you start. It's not just that you feel frustration. Feeling frustration is okay. That's not a big deal. What becomes a problem is when you start living within that frustration. You start sort of imagining, okay, well, she's coming over, and then she's going to say this, and she's going to talk, ooh, spicy, and whatever. And what happens when that goes on is that we start reacting from feelings, our frustration, our anger, whatever, starts coming up automatically. We lose perspective. We start, in a way, it's that dream life, like the one that Qian created for herself. And even our actual life, I mean, you know, it sort of goes on hold as we sort of toggle back and forth between, well, the cousin's coming over, and, well, here I am, and what am I going to do? From chili, you can go on to much more difficult things. So, like the situation of someone, an alternative would be you've been in love with someone and they tell you they don't love you or something along those lines. That's likely to get people pretty upset and take that further. And when we get involved in those situations, when we start imagining things, we narrow ourselves down. We sort of take on a half-life as we get caught up in that thinking and in that imagination. Here I'm thinking, well, this will happen and then that will happen and she'll come over and we'll say that and so on. And that's really what happens to Qian, isn't it? I mean, she responds to this bad news by, flight. I mean, that's one response to bad things that can happen to us. Or we can imagine our dream life with our ideal mate or something like that. And we can shut ourselves down by not wanting to feel the frustration, the desire to... We don't want to upset our father, but we just can't stay here. So Qian not only flees, but she shuts herself down. She assumes a near death, which in a way sort of satisfies her father, right? I mean, he can't complain. This woman's in a coma. I can't marry her off to the wrong guy now. But we do those kinds of things. Our practice is, in a way, to see through that. And I think it's interesting that the end of the story involves Qian coming home and coming home to her body, which is, I think, a very fruitful way to think of our practice, where we sit and we continually come back over and over again from these thoughts and fantasies that we've been, that have led us away from this moment, and this thinking, this dream life based on imagining that we're going to get something we want, or that we got to protect ourselves from something that's happened or going to happen, being angry about something that's happened, being angry that my wife's cousin is coming over for chili and going to interrupt my TV. But our practice is about waking up from that sort of thing. Not waking up to some great truth or to some idea or some tremendous vision, and certainly not waking up and thereby having no problems at all. If I decide, well, I'm going to go sit, and I can still be fairly frustrated that my wife's cousin is going to come over, but I'm not carried away by it. That's a difference. Just waking up over and over again and living our lives without being caught up in these thoughts and feelings and ideas that lead us to react from this artificial sense of being caught up in the poisons of attachment, aversion, and delusion, especially the delusion or avidya, not seeing clearly, not seeing what's going on, and therefore being condemned to go through this whirling cycle over and over again that has a sort of feedback. By not seeing how this is working, our feelings get, negative feelings get more and more intense, and we get enclosed on ourselves and we feel more and more like a nugget here, where something out there is something we want, or something that's going to hurt me, or something that's really made me angry. We can see through how that's happening and have some perspective on a different way to live. I don't think women would ever talk in that like that, but I think that's an important part of our practice. And in that sense, that's how we find the joyful ease of zazen in the middle of our painful joints. And I think I'll leave it there for now. Does anybody have any other comments about Chen? And which one is the true Chen? Or does anybody want to tell us who you are? If you want to look in your chant books, the harmony of difference and sameness is on page 8.
What page?
Page 8. And as Taigen said, it's full of images about difference and sameness, but in a couple of ways. One is how things can resemble each other. You know, the beginning of the mind of the great sage of India is intimately transmitted from west to east, and
for example, grasping at things.
Yeah.
The difference is the material illusion, according to the same, is still not enlightenment. So this shifting between difference and same is that there's two different aspects of Chet and the one. So.
Right, and there's a series of images on darkness and light, the back foot, the front foot, the lid of a box, and the box, how they fit together. So that while they are not the same, they can't be conceived of independently outside of that relation. And that's the sort of, I think that the great thing about this as a poem is that it doesn't, it provides imagery. It doesn't ask you to come up with ideas and walking around explaining, oh, how I'm the same right now, there's sameness at the same. I'm different, but there's sameness right here. But the images are the sorts of thing that pop up as you are just awake or sitting sometimes. So come up,
I think it occurs to me in terms of the story, if it hadn't been for the gem who was in a coma in her bed at home, and she had just run off with her boyfriend, the father might have, who knows what happened, sent people after her, brought her back, all kinds of, it would have been a very different story.
Yeah, and
in some ways the two depended on each other.
Yes, and there's certainly, it's hard to talk, to try to load too much on a simple folk story like that, but certainly you could say, this was not exactly skillful behavior, right? I mean, the father says, well, I've you're betrothed to Jen over here, or Chow over here, and instead of just saying, okay, we're running off, or I'm going to go into a coma now, could there possibly been a chance to say, well, Joe and I have been together and we're in love and I appreciate what you want to do for me, but he's a pretty good guy. Do you think there's any chance at all you could make this work out? I don't know. But our thinking is, it's easily caught up in those kinds of polarities and just the automatic reaction, oh my God, and a quick reaction that undermines the possibility of skillful action. Yeah.
Thank you. It's fascinating. My mind is just spinning over this stuff because I was thinking about how in life, how we sometimes, take different paths. Mm-hmm. Or we begin, maybe at 20, we have one path in mind or a certain personality style. And then a little later, we choose. Careers easy to talk about, which is something different. We move and meet different people, and another part of ourselves comes out, and we become more aware. But that as we move, make a change in direction at different points in our lives, we're still affected by what we were or what we didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like I'm trying to lead down my books, and it's very hard for me to get about books that I've had even since I was 20, because it represents something, that was a glimpse of I could pursue that more, or that's something that I identify with, even though I didn't do that. It's like, so we're always kind of, what we are now maybe is hedged against or pulling against what we didn't do, or this other part that we did in the past. But I think this idea it makes me think of the different parts of ourselves, and we don't have to make all the things that I think sometimes we have to be I wonder if it does get in the way of being wholehearted about whatever we do.
Yeah, I think, and I think that maybe part of what you're saying is also a message that, you know, Chen's reaction to this bad news was to run away or shut down so she didn't have to face it, and so she goes to the next province with Zhou, and they have what looks like a very successful life, but they're sort of uneasy. And at the same time, really, she's, in a sense, she's dead back home. And and we tend to do that when faced with both difficult situations and painful emotions, or the likelihood that we're going to have a difficult conversation with our father, for example.
Different parts of ourselves, or the past not taken, or the parts of ourselves that are still there but we haven't followed through on. So part of us.
I think, you know, one of the challenges of just how we think is we keep wanting to define ourselves and what is our true self, and we have to act in accordance with what we conceive of our true self being. And I'm not sure that's the most fruitful way to live. But, yeah, certainly.
Write a story about myself because I needed to present that. It's very, very difficult to do. I needed to do it in 3 minutes. And the things I said about myself in this 3 minutes were not exactly true. They were sort of a combination of the truth and compressions of the truths that were not quite true, but it was a very difficult exercise to have to do. And I was just thinking about how different it is to try to define yourself when you have to explain to people who you are. The difference between that explanation and who you really are, you know, it's not the same.
That's what the Heart Sutras is, any definition or explanation of yourself, actually anything. This is all of this.
Yeah.
They can be good pointers, but they're not good definers.